to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We got a great hour lined up for you. We're going to be joined by both John Roberson, as well as Marty Angelo, whose website is oncelifematters.com. And we're gonna have a fantastic discussion with John and Marty in just a brief minute. I want to just cover a few pieces of news, folks. Check HagmanReport.com on a daily basis. We are going to be changing the format of that website, but we continue daily to keep it updated with news and information both relevant to the show as well as news relevant to your information gathering and the current events of what's happening in and around the globe. One interesting article that's up there now is there's a number of interesting articles, but the Reuters piece, Cashless Society Getting Closer. And folks, you should check this out. More than a third of Europeans and Americans would be happy to go without cash and rely on electronic forms of payment if they could, and at least 20% already pretty much do so, a new study showed on Wednesday. The study was conducted in 13 European nations, as well as the United States and Australia, and found that in many places where cash is most used, people are among the keenest to ditch it. They say over 35% of residents in Europe and almost 40% in the U.S. would be willing to go to a cash-free society. When I see topics like that about the cashless society, the digital economy, that's something that sets off many red flags with me, because we know that's what they're going to move towards. We know, in the Bible, when it talks about the last days, the beast system, we know that they're going to have a new world order type system where nobody will be able to buy or sell or be part of the economy or society without that mark. And anytime I see interest in the idea of the cashless society being thrown out there, it sets alarm bells off in my mind. So I always want to make sure we cover that. All right. And we do one more minute and we'll be bringing on, John and Marty. Just want to thank Eric, the tech, as he's rushing together to put, doing a lot of work to put the visuals and get those correct. We talked a little bit about Bill Nye yesterday, and there was folks, I don't know how many people saw it. The article's up on Hagman Report. Bill Nye's bizarre video on transgenderism bombs on YouTube. I have not went on net. Bill Nye is an engineer, not a scientist, but was known as Bill Nye the Science Guy. He has a new special on Netflix, which I'm kind of afraid to watch. I actually looked at the episodes and the titles of the episodes today, and one of them is just about sex, and that's where this video comes from, because it's a video that some woman is performing a rap video and talking about sex acts and transgenderism. Well, Bill Nye came out today, or in an interview, and he talked about how we should be punished for having too many children in this country. And he's also came out and said that man-made climate change deniers should face criminal charges. Well, now he's saying the same thing. He says because his quality of life is affected because of the massive amounts of children that are people that are out there, the overpopulation, and that's contributing to man-made global warming, which is ruining his quality of life. I mean, the guy's a lunatic. He's a full-scale liberal, insane, a weirdo. I mean, I don't like to call names, but I'm running out of words to describe the behavior and the mentality of some of these people. But again, go to HagmanReport.com, bookmark the site, and check the site daily for important news, because we don't even get to a lot of the news that we put on the site. With that, we have John Roberson and Marty with us. And John, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you bring Marty on.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. And I just want to point out for the record, Marty and I are trying to be professional as you made these remarks.
Sounded like me. And
I don't know about you, Marty, but I was laughing into my arm. Folks, greetings and God bless all of you. And special thanks, of course, to Doug and Joe for giving me the honor of sitting in this evening. And it truly is an honor. What we have planned for you for the next hour, folks, I thought about it a lot today, and I prayed on it as well. And I believe that as we speak, there are men and women in our listening audience who are hurting, okay? They've got secrets that they're afraid to take to the cross. They can't even tell their best friend or their wife or their husband. They're doing drugs. They're popping pills. That glass of Chardonnay after work is turned into maybe 4 to 6 glasses of Chardonnay, et cetera, et cetera. And you are going to be introduced momentarily to a man who, much like myself, went through the entertainment industry with eyes wide open, but got beat up, scarred, bloodied, walked both sides of the tracks for sure. We're going to take you folks from the 1960s in upstate New York at the University of Buffalo, where a young, impressionable man with a heart exploding with passion to be in the music industry began to have his mind warped by leftist wacko professors who begin to mold and frame his spirit into one of rebellion and his thoughts into one of even revolution. But this young man decided he knew what to do. He got on the rock and roll train and made it to New York City. And I'm going to go ahead and let him tell his story. But it is it's with great pleasure, and it is a distinct honor to welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report this evening a man who will not say it himself, so I'll say it. He's a legend in the music industry, in the phenomenon known as disco, and in 1970s dance television. So that being said, Marty Angelo, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
John, I'm very humbled and pleased to be with you. And Joe, when you were describing the liberal radical guy, you know, I started laughing because I thought he was describing me. And it's true. I mean, that's what I was. I mean, when I was in college, I was kind of went in as a naive high schooler looking to get an education. And, my dad was a doctor, so I had kind of sights to do that. But yet, I got involved with the Students for Democratic Society. It was called the SDS. And, most of my professors that I had, in school, you know, mainly we were going to school to get out of going to the war in Vietnam. You know, Lyndon Johnson pushed it, and then after that came Nixon. But, you know, I didn't know much about a war. I just didn't want to go off to war. I went to a couple of years of military school, but I got radicalized, and I didn't really understand what that word was. I didn't know what a liberal was. I didn't know what a conservative was. I was just a kid. And here these professors were browbeating us with all of their, jargon of turning on and tuning in and dropping out. And, do your own thing. And, here's some marijuana and here's a couple of signs. Why don't you go out and demonstrate on campus? And so I did, but I started getting, doing musical group, bookings, for these radical speakers that came to town, which was like Jerry Hoffman and Abby Rubin and Bobby Seale and some of the guys that went on to be called the Chicago Seven that disrupted the national convention in the Democratic convention in Chicago. And so that got me hooked in the entertainment business. So I went on, had my own band, took a band from Buffalo. They were really good musicians called The Raven, took them to New York, and that's when I hooked up with Jimi Hendrix because he heard this tape that I had, and he convinced this club owner to give us a break because he liked the group. He wanted to produce the group, and Jimmy was a really nice guy. He was a very humble guy, and I really owed a lot to him to getting my start. And that's what pushed me into that era. So now I was a full-fledged radical liberal hippie. Now I was a hippie with a beard, long hair. It looked like Charlie Manson's brother. They used to call me Marty Marty. And so I was making big money though. I mean, I really had a good thing going. I went on from that group to book a group called manage a group called the Grassroots featuring Rob Grill, which was, around the time with the Beach Boys and Three Dog Night and the Mamas and the Papas. We were all on kind of the same record company. And so that got my career going. And my life was a mess, though, let me tell you.
Well, we had the privilege, folks, speaking yesterday, Marty and I, and it was just a really blessed conversation. And we were able to sort of share some war stories. And, you know, there's so many things that you spoke about yesterday that touched my heart. Marty, but in order to context your story as we move down the line here this evening, and folks, we're gonna hang out with John Lennon a little bit. We're gonna be in the disco scene of New York City. We're gonna get busted in Miami. We're gonna go to Hollywood. We're going a lot of places here in a very short time with our very special guest, Marty Angelo. And again, that's oncelifematters.com. which is also the title of his breakout book, Once Life Matters. And I'd like to point out quickly before we jump back in that Marty's penned quite a few books. And the titles, I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to read these yet, but one of them in particular, I'm sure part of our conversation will definitely revolve around this. Addiction is Not a Disease. Other titles, Vision of the New Jerusalem Now, and Lives That Matter, Letters from Prison. Perhaps a little foreshadowing there. Marty, you have a sister who figures prominently in your story, Joanne, yes, I believe is her name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this before we move forward.
Sure.
What was the spiritual background? I hate to use the term religious, but where was your family at with God and with Christianity? Were you brought up in the church? What did you know about Jesus, brother?
Well, I really didn't know much about Jesus other than I was raised in the 50s in the Roman Catholic Church. I wanted to be a priest. I was an altar boy. And this was back in the era, this was before the Ecumenical Council with Pope John the 23rd. That was in the 60s. He convened that with the Protestants. They called them, before they were, we were told that they were heathen, they were all going to hell along with the Jews, the blacks, and we were the only ones that were going anywhere. And if there was a heaven, that's where we were going. And you had to be a Roman Catholic in order to do that. Now, a lot of people nowadays don't understand that, but we were told that the Bible was a forbidden book. You shouldn't read it. It'll only confuse you. And if you have any questions, you just come to this priest or the nuns. Well, all I knew about God at that time was they used to beat me up if I got in trouble. They'd hit me. And there was nothing. I never heard Jesus loves you. I didn't hear that until I was 35 years old. So I had a rebellious spirit and a religious rebellious spirit because, you know, I really, really wanted to become a priest. I mean, I used to practice in my room. I had little chalices and these little, I stole some hosts once from the priest and he caught me. Honestly.
You know you're not supposed to do that, right, Mark?
No, well, they weren't consecrated. I discounted the fact that they weren't consecrated, but he started running out of hosts. He started running out of these hosts at mass and he thought somebody's stealing. And he caught me. My mother let him into my room and there I was. I had like vestments with towels around my neck and I had a little make-believe altar and there I was with these hosts and he came and he whacked me, man, and he fired me from the altar. You know, you think the guy would have said, look at this guy, he wants to be a priest. Maybe I should encourage him and tell him that all about Jesus. Well, honestly, so that was my, when you asked me my religious upbringing, I went to a Catholic, military school called Cardinal Farley Military Academy in Rhinecliff, New York. They were taught by the Irish Christian Brothers. And, all they did was drink all night. You could hear them singing and drinking and singing all these Irish songs. And, you know, we had to go to mass. We had to go to confession. I remember the Russians were going to come. We're going to have a war when John Kennedy, did the naval, deal and with, Cuba. So, we didn't know anything about Jesus, man. When I look back on it now, I just get sick to my stomach because I was lied to, honestly. I mean, I don't want to blame people for my problems because I will accept my consequences for my sinful life once I realized that it was a sinful life. No one, you know, we drove that word right out of our vocabulary in college. I mean, we did our own thing. And if it felt good, you did it. And you did a lot of it. I mean, there was no evangelist back there. There was no, rehabs to go for if you had a drug problem. There was no one on campus that was telling us about Jesus. We were lost. I mean, just plain lost. The lost generation.
Indeed. And you know, a couple things really resonate with me in what you just said, Marty. Number one, when we look at the millennials today, a friend of mine and a regular guest on the program, Stephen Menking, is fond of saying that the millennials are a generation who have been lied to their entire lives. By a generation who was lied to their entire lives. Yeah. And so, Marty, before we jump back into the story, I just want to point out to folks that our goal tonight is by to no means glamorize some of the things you're going to hear about, because our world and the prince of air, the prince of darkness that has been given temporary dominion over this world has tricked all of us, myself, Marty, Doug, and Joe, at different points in our lives. We've all been tricked into believing that hanging out with John Lennon and Jimi Hendrix and doing a little coke, doing a little heroin, it's glamorous. You know, there's women everywhere and the money flows. And the best part, Marty, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is that you don't have a regular job. You know, You've got the cool job. So let's jump back into your story. You're sitting down with Jimi Hendrix. You're at the Scene nightclub in New York City. You're sitting down with Jimmy. What happened?
Yeah. Well, you know, I looked up to the guy. Again, I had low self-esteem, and I always felt like I was on the outside looking in, if you understand what that is. I was always like, am I supposed to be here? But yet, my love of money and my party Marty attitude was, you know, I went along with whatever anybody said. I mean, Jimmy, one time when we were tripping on LSD, said we were from the asteroid belt that went around Saturn. And I said, wow, that's pretty far out, man. Okay. I had no foundation. Yeah, none. And so when I met John Lennon later on, he said that, Christianity is dead. God is dead. The Beatles were more popular than Jesus and Christianity would soon fade away. And I believed it. I said, hey, listen, John Lennon, no, I mean, he's a big shot, man. He wrote all these hit records and that's what a lot of people that are lost, they get these little idols, and so, I mean, that even magnified it even more in my own life because I met these people, and they became my role models, and looked like we all looked the same, and we all kind of, mimicked the people that we hung around with, and so, but we were lost. Everybody was upset. Everybody was depressed. Guys' lives were being shattered. Jimmy died of an overdose, then my friend Janis Joplin died of an overdose. People were dropping left and right, and then all of a sudden, I get arrested right in the middle of this career.
before we jump forward, let me just place a little bit of context around the story. So, folks, our guest this hour, Marty Angelo, again, oncelifematters.com, really wanted to be a musician, but the reality is he just wasn't very good. And so, and this is what it was like for me in Hollywood to a degree as well. Whereas I could write, I could not act. And there came a moment where I had to just realize, you know what? I'm never going to be an actor.
Yeah.
So you have that terrible sense of always being the odd man out. You're on the outside looking in. But at the same time, Marty, I'm sure you'd agree, there's nothing you want more than to fit in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the whole thing. And I never did fit in. I was all, like I said, I always felt like I was on the outside looking in, and I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to have the money. I figured if I just got more money, I'd be happy. If I got another girlfriend or maybe a blonde this time, she'd make me happy. And if I got a new car or I got a big house in Malibu, that would make me happy. And if I just worked another gig, I started working with the Jacksons. I started working with various different groups and combined a lot of concerts put groups together with and had these big concerts, and I was still empty. I was still lost, man. And I had such an emptiness in my heart. There was like a void that I couldn't fill, and I tried to fill it with all the drinking and the drugging and the whoring around and all of these different money and situations, but I could never make myself have any real peace in my life.
Because you can't. That's exactly.
Well, I learned that later, you know, and I'm thankful and I can laugh about it, but until you meet the Prince of Peace, who is Jesus Christ, you got no peace. And it's just phony peace. You'll believe the television commercials when they show the beer commercials with all the girls around the pool and everybody's having a good old time, but they don't show you, the tragedy that happens with alcoholism and drug
abuse.
You don't ever hear those stories. Now you do. Nowadays you do. Back then.
And you know, something that Marty and I sort of discovered as we got to know one another in our pre-show work over the last couple of days, there's about 20, 25 years that separate our time in the entertainment industry. But when you're messing with the devil, certain things are timeless. And let me tell you folks something. At 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, when you're out on the sidewalk in front of a club and the music's popping and you know that, you just know that, well, at least you think you're where you should be at that moment, okay? You, for lack of a better word, you feel like the man. The scene when the sun comes up the next morning is invariably different. It's
not
ugly.
Good.
The women aren't pretty. The jokes aren't clever. The drugs run out and you're essentially left alone with yourself.
Yes.
except Marty, I'm sure you would agree, you don't even know yourself.
No. I took on so many different personalities. I couldn't even identify who I was. I mean, even to this day, when I look back on it, I said, I get sick sometimes of the tricks that I fell into that took away some of my personality that God restored it. I mean, I'm thankful that I had an experience with Christ and he transformed me, but it took an awful lot, John. I mean, I'm thankful that I'm alive because I should be dead. And people ask me, well, how come you're alive? I guess it's the grace of God, and God had a plan for my life. And I just wasn't sure what it was, and I wasn't really looking. You know, I was one of these guys that was not looking for salvation. I was looking for peace or happiness, which I tried to get in the drugs and the alcohol. But once I couldn't fill that, I didn't know that there was a spiritual experience that you could have that would fill all of those needs. That was so far, and I honestly wish that it would have happened sooner, but you can't go back. You gotta live in the now. You gotta accept what God's plan is and purpose is for my life. And so I move forward each and every day.
Amen. Well, we've got about four and a half minutes until we go out to break.
Sure.
So I'm gonna hand it over to you, Marty. Why don't you tell the folks, get us up to the point where you're on the airplane with your dad. Things have not been going well, and you tried to basically, well, you tell the story, sir. Go right ahead. Well, Joe, we'll cue Marty when we get close to the break, please.
Absolutely.
Yes. I had gone through so much, and I was working with the grassroots at the time and living in Hollywood at a big house with a pool. I was just depressed. I had taken all these drugs, and I could not find any peace. And like I said, my whole life was a wreck. And so I tried to kill myself. And I took this drug called PCP, and I couldn't come down from it. So I started taking all of these Valiums to come down from the PCP. Couldn't come down. And I said, you know, so I kept taking more and more and more, and all of a sudden I've overdosed. And I wind up in the hospital. And I actually wanted to die. And when they brought me out of it, I said, oh my God, I can't even kill myself. So anyway, I did it again. I came back, had another bottle of these pills. I did it again. Boom, right back in the hospital. Thank God my roommate found me, rushed me to the hospital. And so my parents then flew out from New York to get me. I mean, and they had to come and get me. And so on the plane going back to Buffalo, I was an old record guy. I was in the entertainment business, so I was always looking for an angle and a new job. And so I started reading about disco, and it had just started coming out in Billboard magazine. And I thought, wow, this is great. You know, these clubs are selling records without any airplay on the radio. And I was promoting records at the time also, and get paid from different record companies to go and try to get records played on the radio. And that took a lot. Back then you had to have a lot of money. There was a lot of payola. There was a lot of things going on behind the backs of the people. And so, but here we found this new era, which was disco, and you only had to give a DJ a copy of the record, the guy played it, and the people heard it, went up and said, what was that song? And they ran down the street and bought the record from the record store. So we found a new direction, and so I wanted to get involved. Now, here I am, just finished trying to kill myself. You'd think I would have snapped out of it and not gone back in that direction, but no, not me. So I became like an innovator of disco. I started promoting the music, and I thought, you know, we need a vehicle. We need something to push us over the edge so it would get in mainstream, because it was not in mainstream. If you remember the disco era, it took a while, and then once it hit mainstream, that everything went disco. And so Saturday Night Fever was the one that kind of pushed it over the edge, but it also was its demise. And so leading up to that, I started to produce a television show that would give exposure to disco records that I was promoting, and the record companies would pay me, and I'd play them on my television show, and kids would dance to it, and we had this nice little thing going on. One of the offshoots was Dance Fever with Denny Terrio, and Merv Griffin was the producer, and then Robert Stigwood came along with the movie Saturday Night Fever. He contacted me and my group of DJs of the New York Record Pool, and they wanted us to know who we would want to be a star in the movie Saturday Night Fever. And he gave us this kind of list of different actors. And we picked Travolta, because every time he would appear anywhere, 10,000 screaming girls would show up at them at a shopping mall. So we thought, if anybody's going to push this over the edge, it's going to be a guy like Travolta, couldn't know how to dance to save his life. So they hired Danny Terrio and taught him how to dance. And, you know, he had the looks, though, man. I tell you, the guy was a good-looking man. And so it fit right in. And so that movie took off like crazy, man. That was, and we were sitting right on top of that whole movement. And so we started flying high. You couldn't buy a time on my, a commercial time on my show. And, we went from being hardly any, knowing, no one knew what that movement was to now everybody wanted it. And so, but then it wasn't working then. I ran into a problem. My sister, I call her a problem at times, John, because she was like the thorn in my flesh. She was this, she had become a Christian. And I don't know if you want to go into this direction yet or you want to do it after the break.
Well, we're just about to come up on the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it after the break. And this is has been a fascinating segment. That I love hearing these stories and their testimony. It's very interesting. Folks, we're talking with Marty Agnello. The website is www.oncelifematters.com. That's oncelifematters.com. And the book is also called Once Life Matters. And check that out. Again, go to the website and check out the book. And we're going to be back with John and with Marty in the next segment. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is, it'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric's a...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Chang Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Armies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic armies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Armies kit at www.changelessonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest this segment is Marty Agnello, and John Robertson is also joining us. OnceLifeMatters.com. OnceLifeMatters.com is Marty's website. And folks, Marty's been very generous, and he did a special for Hagman and Hagman listeners. If you go to Amazon and you search for Marty's book, Once Life Matters, he has the Kindle version available for Hagman and Hagman listeners for only 99 cents. You can't beat that. Again, the title of the book is Once Life Matters. Go to Amazon, find the Kindle edition for 99 cents. Marty, I want to thank you so much for extending that offer to our listeners. And again, thank you for coming on. Let's pick up right where you left off.
So, Marty, we left off. You were working in the music industry. You had 13 years of partying and hanging out, and I think from what I've learned, to say you were living a duplicitous life would probably be being kind. It sounds like you were a fractured human being, yeah, who probably looked pretty cool on the outside and was a hot mess on the inside. So, Marty, if you would take another couple minutes, let's talk a little bit about L.A. and Famous Amos, and then let's move on into the Miami thing, and let's talk about the collision with Jesus Christ.
Marty? Yes. Well, you know, I can mention my sister Joanne. She had become a Christian a couple of years before this all, before my bottom came. But she kept reaching out to me, sending me these little tracts and books and things, and telling me about Jesus loved me and he got a different life. And you can, and I said, listen, I don't want to know anything about this. That I attributed Jesus to the one that I knew back and when I was in religion, and so I didn't want to really know about it. But she planted a lot of seeds. But this TV show that I had was really the number one rated show. It crossed over. It hit all these major markets with the network broadcast quality equipment. And I started off on cable and black and white. So this is how big this thing got. And so it was actually the first television show that ever crossed over from cable to broadcast. And it's the first television show that was ever, first website that was ever donated to the Library of Congress, which is, you know, I have a couple of firsts in my life. But this show, my sister knew that I was dying. I had overdosed many times. I wound up in the hospital with rapid heartbeats and came so close to death. And so she amped up her outreach to me. And so she said, she started praying, God, do whatever it takes. And so this TV show I had, I was the creator, the producer, and the writer. And so I was getting three different paychecks. And all of a sudden I get this call and say, we've got this meeting. And there's a production company from New York City that was going to come in, and they wanted to take over the show. And they offered me a job as an associate producer. And I was like, associate, an AP? Wait a minute now. That's down the ladder. And so, but as I look back on it, and when I compared notes with my sister, the day that she started praying, God, do whatever it takes, was the day of this meeting. And I couldn't understand why they wanted to change this and change the name. And if I didn't like it, they were going to change the name. So I got so upset. They said, look, Marty, take it or leave it. We're going to do it with or without you. So I said, well, you're going to do it without me. My pride was hurt. And, I walked out the door. And so I wound up then going, I went to Florida, met some friends of mine. You know, we've got the Coke thing, and I was going to bring a couple ounces of Coke back to California. And there was my friend was also an independent record promoter, and he had a contact with Famous Amos, and they were talking about Famous Amos was a guy that had the chocolate chip cookie, famous for the chocolate chip cookie, a very independent guy, had a lot of money, and he wanted to do a TV show that was very similar to what MTV then finally did. And I thought, wow, this is a great idea. You take the song and you run out with a camera, a crew, and you make a story, a video, a visual about the song. And this was really before they even did these types of things.
And yeah, so, what year was that, Marty?
What year would you say that was? 80. It was 70, 77 maybe, something like that, 78.
Okay, so you were literally sitting there. You're sitting there. Having done, and folks, his show was called Disco Step by Step. For those of you who are some of our pop culture aficionados, But I want to emphasize, Marty, and I'll hand it back to you. Here he is at probably the biggest meeting of his life, okay? And that's saying something, because this guy hung out with John Lennon, Jimi Hendrix, and a whole host of others. This is a meeting in New York City that is going to potentially change your life. We're talking network television. Yeah. We're talking national syndication. We're talking big time here, folks. This is kind of the world I moved around in. Yeah. And at the same time, his sister Joanne is in prayer that rather than Marty capitulating into the life he believed was his life to live, that he would fall into the life that Jesus Christ would have him live. Marty, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I wish I would have listened to her then, but I didn't. Oh boy. Does that sound familiar, folks? But there's a time and a place for everything. And I think this is what God was arranging in my life. As you look back when you see the hand of God on your life, you can tell these moments. I call them God moments, prison moments. And when, if you go to prison, it's a prison moment where, you know, you really, God's get your attention. And so, that was one of the times I could have gone either direction. Of course, without having a foundation, without knowing God, I went the other direction and just got more into drugs and more into rebellion and more into living however way I thought I could live. And I thought I was doing pretty good. And so, one of these trips back to Florida, my friends had become under investigation by the federal authorities, by the Drug Enforcement Agency. And so they were under investigation. Their phones were tapped. They were being followed. And I fly right into this from Hollywood, California to Miami, Florida, of all places. And and they thought they had Mr.
Nothing going on here.
Mr. Hollywood. And, oh, man, you know, I could imagine these guys with their headphones were tapped. The phone. Oh, my gosh, there's a guy from Hollywood. And we're going to follow him, and I bet you he's a music business connection or something. We got to follow this guy. And so I walked into this thing, and I wound up getting arrested. The hammer came down. In fact, it was funny. Well, funny now, but I was looking out my window, and we sat at this beautiful home on Hibiscus Island in Miami, and where the cruise ships would go out, and we had this big yacht back, and I looked out the window to check out the boat, you know, and I was like, who are all these guys? There's guys with guns out, and they have these rifles, and there's one guy's laying on the ground, and I picked up the phone and called 911. I think somebody's trying to kill me. And the lady goes, no, I think you just better put down the phone. And the door got kicked open, and the cops came in, and the guy goes to me, Marty, we've been following you around. We've been listening to you on the phone. The party's over, he tells me. Party, Marty, no longer has a party. They handcuffed me to the lawn furniture by my swimming pool, and where I usually lounge in the sun, you know, catching the rays, and here I am arrested, going to go to Miami, at Dade County Jail. And you want to talk about coming to a rude awakening, John. And I actually said, thank God, for some reason or another, because I didn't know how to stop, and I knew my life was out of control, but I didn't know, you know, I think these seeds that my sister had planted in me were starting to take a hold, because when I was sitting in county jail and I tried to tell the jailer that I didn't belong there, I said, look, I'm a music business. I'm a big shot in the entertainment business. The guy tells me, shut up. You know, a typical off cop, you know, shut up and lay down on your bunk. Hey, tell it to the judge. He says in the morning, I have to stay there all weekend. And so I started to get this, this introspection, the psychiatrists call it. And, you know, I guess Christians call it taking a good look at yourself. And I didn't like what I saw. Here I was.
You know,
maybe going to prison the rest of my life.
Folks, I just want to interject quickly that and I've been transparent about this on the Hagman and Hagman Report before. I've tangled with drugs and alcohol for a huge portion of my adult life. And I just want to really emphasize what Marty just shared with you. And Marty, God bless you for just being transparent and standing up for the Lord here tonight. Because there are moments when you can't stop doing what you know you need to stop.
Yeah.
And frankly, getting cuffed up and taken in, it's scary, especially if you're on a kind of drug where you know you're going to go through a rough detox. Yeah. And yet at the same time, you just have that weird hope. You know, you called it introspection a moment ago, perhaps conviction. And you just have that one little seed of hope inside you. And it's not even a prayer yet, because you don't even know how to pray. You just have that thing inside you where it's dying and it's pleading with you, like, save my life, you know? And so Marty, there you were in Dade County Jail. Now let's talk about what happened with the Miami cop. I mean, it's almost like the Lord started to send his warriors. First it was your sister, prayer warrior, wearing out her knees for you. Now you've got, some law enforcement, some peace officers helping you out. What happened there?
Well, I'd have to fast forward this a little, because they let me off on bail, and I had to convince the judge that I wasn't really a drug dealer. And the jargon that they had on tape of my phone conversations had nothing to do with dealing drugs. It was talking about records that record companies would send me, and I was giving them feedback. Well, cops said, no, that's drug jargon, Your Honor. That records are really cocaine, pounds, pounds and pounds of it. And I said, no, it was 40 from disco records. Anyway, they let me out, and so I wound up, I, when you get arrested, John, nobody wants to know you. Did you know that? it's not a good...
I'm gonna plead the fifth on that one, Marty. that's our next show, folks.
Right. So I never experienced that before. I mean, I had little brushes with the law, but so anyway, I wound up going back to my sister because she had called me, and I wanted to kill myself. I said, I'm looking to go to prison. I had like 15 different indictments again because the DEA thought I had all these other conspiracies, but it really wasn't. But I finally they finally offered me a plea deal. But anyway, that's getting ahead of myself. I wound up my sister's door. I said, listen, Joanne, whatever you've got, I want. My life is a mess. I'm going to prison the rest of my life. All I want to do is just kill myself. I just want to die. And she says, well, she almost passed out when she saw me. She said, well, let me make a phone call. So I wind up going over to her prayer group. Now I meet the prayer warriors, right? And I walk in this house, and it looked like they were glowing. They looked like saints. And here I was, I hadn't shaved. I looked like Charlie Manson's brother. I mean, I had this long, stringly hair and just got, messed. And I walk in, and they're shining. And they started to explain the gospel to me. So, I mean, I became a Christian. Electrifying thunder and lightning hits the south. They laid their hands on me. I was transformed, they say, in the twinkling of an eye. I was laying flat on the floor. I didn't want to get up. I felt like they were washing me with the inside, and I was being cleaned. And they explained to me that I was a sinner, and I said, I don't understand what the word sin is. If you want to call it sin, let's call it sin, if that's what you want to call it. They said, Marty, yeah, it is. And if you want to repent, and I said, well, I don't know how to repent. How do you repent? What do you say, a bunch of Hail Marys and go to some priest and tell them about your... No, it's not that. So anyway, they explained the gospel. Christ came into my life and changed me. And it was such a miracle. But, 2 weeks after this happens, John, I get indicted. They finally get an indictment, comes through. They had held me over for grand jury, and it took about 7 months. So now I'm back down to Miami, and I have to go face the music, right? I have to go to court. I got a lawyer. And I'm praying to God, don't leave me. I don't know, because I was a completely different person, man. I was completely changed. And so I went to speak at this Full Gospel Businessman's Breakfast. The guy invited me to it, and I had never heard of them. And we're eating pancakes, and the guy goes, Marty, why don't you tell your story? And I what story? I'm going to prison the rest of my life, but and then I told him my conversion story about what happened that night with the three loud clashes of thunder. And there was a police officer there. His name was Detective Frank Rossi. He was a Miami, on duty Miami police officer. He liked my story. He wanted me to come over to his house and talk to his son about the perils of the entertainment business, which I did. And I did realize that my life was a mess and that it was terrible. I should have never been promoting that lifestyle. And here I had a chance to try to maybe save a kid out of going down that road. And so he appreciated it. So I told him, I says, you know, Frank, I'm going to court. They offered me a plea deal. I'm not sure what I should do. He says, well, I told him the name of the judge. He says, oh, I'll show up down there. So anyway, make a long story short, he shows up on the day of sentencing. The judge calls me up to sentence me. They accepted the plea deal, and he said, does anybody else have anything to say? And in walks this Detective Rossi in his full uniform. Now, police detectives hardly ever wear a full uniform except for funeral. So anyway, he comes in, and he says, well, Jesus Christ changed this man's life. This is not the same Marty Angelo, Your Honor. And the judge looks out, and he says, and he knew the guy. He says, Detective Rossi, what are you doing in my courtroom? He says, I came in here to tell you that this man, this Marty Angelo, is not the same Marty Angelo that is in that prosecutor's file. It's a completely different person. Christ changed his life. Jesus Christ. There was such a hush, John, in the courtroom. People were looking around wondering if they heard things. And the prosecutor was looking, how did this guy get this cop to come into this courtroom and testify on his behalf? You know, I mean, cause it's, you don't ever hear it. Usually the cops are testifying against you. So anyway, the judge was perplexed. He had to get off the bench and go in his eye. He didn't know what to think. Here's this friend of his that he knows is testifying on my behalf. So he comes back out and he directs himself right to this detective. He says, Detective Rossi, I hope you're right, because I'm going to give this guy a break because of what you said. I don't know this guy. If a man, I don't know if his conversion is experience. I don't even know what conversion is. He said, but if you're telling me that this man's changed, then I'm going to give him a break. And I thought, man, John, I thought I was going to go to Bible college. I had all these plans. I was going to go into ministry, because I really was converted, man. I really wanted to serve God. And I didn't know where it was going to be, but I asked, my only prayer of faith was, just tell me through the judge. Lord, just speak through the judge. And so he did. He said, I'm going to sentence you to 2 3-year sentences. two 3-year sentences running consecutive. We got enough preachers out on the street. If God changed you, then you go into that prison and you see if you can change some lives.
Amen.
And man, I had my marching orders.
And indeed you did. And just to shade in a little bit, Marty, let's backtrack for a quick second. Two things I really want to emphasize, listening to this amazing testimony. Number one, when you came to your sister's house, when you went to meet the prayer warriors.
Right.
At that time, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is the moment when you came broken to the cross.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right on. Okay. And secondly, you use some term, I don't remember exactly what you said, but I know that I've felt this before. It feels almost like you're someone's got a power sprayer on the inside of you, and they're power spraying out all these layers of gunk, and all these layers of gunk are what have been keeping you from functioning. And really, folks, that's what they are. You see, all the drugs and the sin and the carousing and all the lying that goes with it, like the myriad lies that you can't even keep track of because you're wasted all the time and you're trying to be cool all the time. Yeah. And everybody else thinks you are cool all the time.
Yeah.
All of that is preventing you from doing the single thing that you were put here to do. You see, you're listening to a man right now.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, I lost my feed for a second. Yeah, am I still with you guys?
Yeah,
you're good, John.
Okay. You're listening to a man right now who was pretending he had it all, okay? And other people were looking up to him, and yet he was gratuitously trying to fill a piece inside of him that nothing was ever going to fill. Except a relationship with Jesus Christ. Marty?
Right. I mean, that, you know, when I go to prisons nowadays, I've been doing this now. This was 35 years ago this happened, John. And I look around sometimes and I say, you know something? I really wish I could tell you that there was another way. And that I could tell you, look, if you just go to a rehab for a couple months and you just, there's some, you know, cause I tried every direction to go in. I've tried all of those different things. I tried astrology and Zen Buddhism and, transcendental meditation. And, I remember George Harrison turned me on to this Maharishna yogi and it didn't work. Nothing worked. And so here I was changed. Now I'm going to prison. And now I'm in, now I get in prison and I have my marching orders and God's using me to help doing exactly what the judge had said. If God changed you, you can change other people's lives. And so I did. I reached out to everybody. I started working with a group called Prison Fellowship, which was founded by Chuck Colson. And we had Bible study every night. We lost Jonathan again. And there we are. And so I was a model prisoner. They took me out of prison and sent me to Washington, D.C. to meet Chuck Olson and the head of the Bureau of Prisons, the head of the Parole Commission. And we started speaking in high schools. I was with about five or six other guys that they did this with. And so then I went back into prison. And from that two-week furlough. And Colson, I had met Colson once on Easter Sunday, came to speak in the prison I was in. And he told me, I went up to him afterwards and I introduced myself. And I said, you know, I used to hate you and your buddies. And John Ehrlichman and Halderman and Nixon. And I said, man, I can't believe that we're like brothers now or something, because Christ, you're telling me Jesus changed you. I'd read his comic book called Born Again, and he changed me. And he looked at me and he says, you know something, Marty, God's got a plan for your life. I said, yeah, I know. I keep hearing this from people, but I don't know what that plan is. I'm in prison. He goes, Marty, believe me, you're going to get out of this prison someday, and God's going to open up the necessary doors for you to go through, and he's got a real plan and purpose for your life. So believe me, he says, he did it with me. I worked for the President of the United States. I was special advisor to President Nixon, and God changed me in a park and parked in my car in somebody's driveway, and he said, so believe me, it'll happen. So I mean, it's funny that he said that, because then after I got out of prison, I wound up working for the man for 4 years. And as an assistant director in Washington, D.C., and then out in California in Los Angeles as an area director for Chuck Colson. And I was always with him, and we had good relationship, and met a lot of politicians, that because he was still a really powerful guy. And he opened a lot of doors for a lot of ex-convicts to work there. And he had a burden, and I had the same burden. I mean, I kind of used him as a role model, and he started writing books, and he became a spokesperson and did a lot of public appearances. And I started doing the same thing then as I grew as a Christian. But I have to keep going back to that day when I was broken and hurt. And it was what I was searching for all of my life, John. I never Amen. Knew it. Never knew it. But I was like, I had a Damascus Road conversion, like the Apostle Paul, where I wasn't looking for it, but God had a plan for him and he had a plan for me. And once you put your hand to that plow, you don't look back and you just move forward. And for 35 years, God has opened every door. I worked at Teen Challenge. I started drug programs for Sheriff's Department in Palm Beach County. I've traveled. I've spoken in prisons. I've written 10 books. I mean, God has really used me. I've reached out to celebrities that going down that same road that I went down. Anybody that's like, if you hear some of these celebrities that are getting arrested, I had a friend of mine that was the Los Angeles County Jail chaplain. And anytime any of these celebrities would get arrested, he would call me. And because they had a celebrity row, they called it. Like O.J. was one of them, and Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, a lot of these little girls that got arrested. And we would reach out to them. I'd send them copies of my book. I would go in and talk to them. I would try to convince them to go into Christian rehab, because I realized that the secular rehabs at that time were not working, and these kids needed a chance. They needed a change. And when I worked at Teen Challenge, I realized that you need more than a month in a rehab. You need at least 9 months to 12 months of a faith-based, and it's really a discipleship program. You drugs were just what brought you to Christ. Arrests just what brings you to Christ, and then he has a whole new life. Whereas a secular rehab isn't going to give you new life. You're just going to be a drug addict the rest of your life.
Yeah, I want to jump in quickly on that. I want to jump in quickly on that, Marty. A couple of things. First of all, by way of show mechanics, we've got about 2 minutes till we go out to our break. At that time, unfortunately, what I'm going to do, Marty, is I'm going to give you over to the care of Joe Hagman. We'll keep you over for a few minutes into the next hour, and thank you for being so kind with your time and for your gift of time to do that. Joe's going to give out the number if folks want to have a quick word with you.
Sure.
Folks, if you'd like to speak with our guest, Marty Angelo, just a couple of requests, please. Give us a call. Joe will give out the number. Let's keep the calls to a single topic or question. If you have need for counsel or advice, or if you need to be directed to people who can really get in and help you, oncelifematters.com, oncelifematters.com. Marty's book, Addiction is Not a Disease, is a great place to start. The reason I'm not staying over into the third hour, gentlemen, is unfortunately I have a battery issue and I'm going to lose contact with the show here in probably another 3 or 4 minutes. So I'd just like to make a final remark, and then Marty, I'll hand it to you, and Joe will take us out. Folks,
great.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, the bottom line is this. Secular rehab is not going to help you. It can put you in a spin dry. It can get you 30 days off of what's killing you. Yeah. But without Jesus Christ, your chances are zero. The recidivism rate in rehab in California today is 97%, and that's what the rehabs admit. So go spend the money, go to the spin dry, get yourself cleaned up, but beyond that, you've got to get under the blood, and you've got to be healed by his stripes. That being said, Joe Hagman, thank you so much. Marty Angelo, I'm John Robertson, HagmanReport.com. I'll see you folks next time before my battery dies. Marty, hang out, and we'll take some calls.
Sure.
John, thank you so much for taking the time and conducting that interview. That was a fantastic interview. And Marty, thanks for your time tonight. And, we'll hang over in, about 15 minutes in the next hour. We'll take calls at 844-769-2944. That's 844-769-2944. We'll take about 15 minutes of calls with Marty, and then we will take calls in through the rest of the hour on anything you guys want to talk about. News related, questions for me and my father, or anything you want to get into. Again, 844-769-2944. Marty Angelo is going to be with us taking calls for the next 15 minutes. His website, oncelifematters.com. That's also the title of his book. You can get it for 99 cents on Amazon Kindle. Once Life Matters. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, DanielHoldings.com. That's DanielHoldings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to DanielHoldings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentations. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.